Today's episode or version or point in the series, if you like to call it that, of the Cambridge Marketing College's fortnightly professional and personal development program is going to be focusing in on responding to increasing brand expectations. Now, that's a big title, but it's also a big thing because what we're finding as marketers, business owners, communicators, is that actually the demands put upon us now are very, very different to what they might have been 18, 24 months ago. And certainly 3 to 5 years ago, things were not like they are today. The customer expectations put upon us, the trends in the marketplace that we're seeing and observing are all individually and collectively shaping the expectations that the world has about how we are going to respond with our products and our services and all of the communications that we put out. So it is getting quite complicated out there. It's getting quite difficult to stay on board, but it doesn't have to be. What I'm going to propose as we go through this session is that let's not just navigate change, but actually drive it. Okay, so I want to be working with you to shape our future with bold and innovative actions today for a tomorrow that we're excited to embrace. Because I think there's a huge opportunity here for commercial advantage, for getting things right, for doing the right thing, and for developing organizations, businesses, propositions, and marketing within the strategies that we create for a better future. So I think all of the trends and all of the increasing brand expectations that are being put on us are giving us an opportunity to do things more effectively, bigger, better, and bolder. So I'd love to be working with you to kind of figure this out and actually work out a way that we can actually embrace some of the key things that we're seeing. Now, through this session, I'm going to be covering a host of different things. I'm going to go relatively quickly through these because there's a lot of complexity, but there's also simplicity. If some of these things resonate with you and you think, yep, okay, that's me, that's my organization, that's where we need to focus, then what I'd recommend you do is note it down and then sort of try and figure out ways of translating some of the more generic opportunities into things that are meaningful for you. So as we go through this, there will be a lot of yes, no decisions, I guess, from the things that you hear, because some of this will be relevant to you and other things you'll think, it does doesn't really affect us, but it's worth knowing anyway. So I'm looking here for you to try and identify as we go through these things, the elements that you feel are going to be most important to be able to respond to the expectations that your brands and your products and your services have from the marketplace and from customers. There is currently, and I'm seeing this come through in a whole variety of different guises, a really increased demand for personalization. I mean, your customers now expect your products and services and the branding and the communications and the interactions that you do to be personalized to them, tailored to their preferences, the behaviors that you should have been listening and spotting that they've done before, and everything previously in their interactions. So this is all about active listening, and the customer knows that you can do this because you've got the technology and you have, if you wish to take it, the opportunity to forge much deeper relationships. So personalization, we're going to see play out in this session. There is also a greater focus on sustainability. No matter where you look, customers are becoming a lot more savvy in terms of gathering information about how you are communicating your sustainability. So this might be as simple as the first few steps on your journey as an organization into a more sustainable world in the future. But it might be that you're deep into your journey and you can demonstrate environmental responsibility, ethical sourcing of the raw materials that you need in your production and creation of products and services, and also sustainable practices in the way you offer up the products and the value that they bring, as well as efficiencies in your operations. So there's a load of different details in there, and we're going to touch on some of those and what you can do about them a little bit later. There's also an expectation for an omni-channel experience. Now, here's a little bit of marketing jargon for you. An omni-channel experience. In other words, customers are seeking a seamless experience across all channels, whether that's for shopping, whether that's online, whether it's in-app, in-store. Your ability and your opportunity here is to create a journey that gives them the ability to switch between channels effortlessly. In other words, if they want to, on the journey through your website, just maybe dip out to your YouTube channel to just kind of check some frequently answered questions or something like that, or maybe sort of dip out in another way, another route to see maybe customer reviews, but not the ones that you've selected on your website, but maybe a more objective third-party offer, then your customer expects to be able to do that. So again, your role here as a communicator, business owner or marketer is to craft an omni-channel experience. So yes, you're going to craft a journey through the customer journey, a route map, if you like, so you can hold their hand. But if they wish to switch over to another channel at any point, any moment, and then you bring them back in seamlessly into the journey again, then that is their choice. And of course, that's all inherently linked with this personalization word. So we're going to look at omnichannel experiences. And the second thing, and kind of following on from that really, is enhanced digital experiences. I mean, with more interactions moving online and deeper into online, as we see VR and AR, metaverse, AI coming through in terms of automation, customers expect high quality, engaging digital experiences, including things like virtual try-ons, AR, immersive online environments. This is all now coming to the fore. This is not any longer the stuff of tomorrow. It's here today. And our opportunity here is to embrace this and figure out where can we use these things to add even more value to what our customers are looking for. And they're also looking for immediate and 24/7 customer support. You know, we can thank the likes of Amazon for really stretching the expectation of, you know, home delivery, for example. And this just this knowing that we can have, you know, pretty much anything that we want to buy or purchase online, we can have it arriving at our door tomorrow or same day, if not within the hour with certain food offerings in retail now. So the immediacy of your product or service, the demand for instant gratification is going to extend to your customer service. It's going to extend to how your customers expect quick and fast responses, round-the-clock support through things like chatbots, social media, and of course, other platforms are available too. So if you are putting an automated response on your website when somebody sends an email to your admin at your brand name, and it says, oh, we endeavor to get back to you within 48 hours. I mean, that feels, doesn't it? It's the thing of yesterday. That feels so, so last year. Now, the expectation is for immediate support in whatever way the customer demands it. So these are just some of the increasing brand expectations that, you know, irrespective of our sector, our product and our service, we're starting to see play through in all the communications that we're getting back from our customers and the things that they're looking to see us respond to. So it is time to respond. It is time to start to figure out, where do I begin? Because if my customer is giving me these increasing demands, if you like, I mean, expectations is a nice gentle word, but these are demands, really, demands to stay sustainably within business, because this is what our customer wants. And you could argue the customer is right. Well, from their perspective, they are. So it is time to respond. But we're not going to be able to respond to everything all in one go. So my recommendation, as I'm going to go through each one of these areas in a bit more detail, is to offer up to you the chance to filter, the chance to prioritize. Now, if you're listening and watching this live right here, right now, it's going to be fast paced. Okay, so we are going to go pretty quickly through all these things. There'll be lots of examples. I'm going to give you a model or a marketing theory that you can use then to critique whether or not this particular item or topic is relevant to you right here, right now. And I'll give you probably an example or two for each one where you can go away and look at other brands who have already started this journey. So be ready to take lots of notes. Now, if you're watching or listening to this on catch up, it's going to be a lot easier and you will be pressing the pause button quite a bit. So we're going to go pretty quickly through this. So first thing that we need to cover is, you know, where do we find these brand expectations to respond to? Well, the first way of doing that is to understand and anticipate these customer expectations. Peter Drucker said, you know, the best way to predict the future is to create it, but we can only create it if we understand what these demands are. So we need to kind of almost get ahead of the game. There's an expectation confirmation theory, ECT, which is a sort of quite a hidden marketing theory, but is very, very effective to use to anticipate customer expectations and demands. And in marketing, it explains how, you know, things like customer satisfaction can be directly linked to their expectations and the perceived performance in their eyes of a product or service. So we need to be properly listening to how a customer interacts or doesn't with the product or service that they've purchased from us. And so that we can then maybe sort of conduct, you know, regular feedback surveys to understand these expectations. We need to definitely be looking and analyzing, you know, the customer's data. So not only when and how they purchase, but actually how they use and when they use the product or service in question, because we need to be looking for trends. You know, different customer groups, different personas may have different usage patterns of the service that we're providing. And of course, if we're looking at this and trying to spot some trends, then we're going to be able to anticipate future needs that they might have as this, you know, changing environment sort of takes place into the future. And of course, if we create customer personas that are really quite accurate, so we know precisely who we're talking about here, when we're listening and when we're anticipating, then we can tailor our marketing strategies really effectively to those needs. So not only just looking at what we can do and the value that we believe we're bringing, but actually turning things around by 180 degrees and thinking and saying and watching, what does our customer actually believe? What is our customer perceiving? Not what we think it is, but what do they think it is? Now, a great example of this is Apple's approach to product launches and updates, often exceeding customer expectations. And of course, that leads to really high levels of customer satisfaction and loyalty. Once you are an Apple convert, because of this very, very anticipatory approach to creating products and services, then you're very unlikely to go anywhere else. You know, other services are available, other products are available, but you're converted. And this is one of the key ways they do it. Yes, they have great technologists. Yes, they have a great brand and it's very motivating and engaging. But behind all of that is they're exceeding your expectation every time you engage with one of their products and services, even from the point of view of packaging, for example, which in itself has a wow factor. You only have to open an Apple box, for example, to really experience that. So they're understanding and anticipating what you expect as a customer, and then they're going the next step further on, and they're exceeding those expectations by knowing how in the future you are going to want or demand more from them. So they're getting there first. So there's a very neat little learning point there, which we can all really learn from. Enhancing your brand appeal and market position is really important. And, you know, as Jonas Sachs says, is that your brand is a story unfolding across all customer touch points. I love that. Your brand is a story unfolding across all customer touch points. And so how can we use this then to begin to anticipate how our brand is going to be perceived if we start to listen to the customer and start to understand what they expect from us? Well, there's Keller's brand equity model, which talks about the importance of brand knowledge in enhancing brand appeal and positioning. In other words, how people integrate and understand the value that our brand brings, not the products and services, but the brand itself, so that we consistently deliver against it. And then understanding where the positioning of that brand and how little kind of details within our brand, maybe how it makes somebody feel, or maybe how it makes them want to feel, or maybe how it gets them to respond in a certain way. All of these little nuances are key here in anticipating and then responding to increased brand expectations. If we're using something like the brand equity model, we can align our brand values against our target audience's beliefs, their preferences, their behaviors, and their needs, the challenges that they've got. We can kind of position ourselves to be their trusted ally, their supporter, or their friend. Whatever it is that you feel is appropriate with the value that your brand brings, this is something we can start to really rate and measure. So not do it in a kind of a woolly subjective way, but do it in a way that's really targeted and really focused. And of course, this will allow us to differentiate. As soon as we start on this journey of responding to increasing brand expectations, we allow ourselves to be more competitive. Because what we'll be doing just by the nature of these kinds of activities is we will be differentiating through our USPs, our unique selling propositions. Because those things, those real values, those additional bits that our competition can't do, if we can trade with those, if we can make those super clear to understand, then our brand can be leveraged alongside the needs of the customer, alongside the way our customer perceives us. So think about, what are your USPs? How do those USPs play out when you think and you communicate your brand? And do those things resonate with actually what your customer wants and demands from you? And if you can leverage social proof and testimonials to give credibility that, hey guys, we're already doing this. This isn't something that we're aspiring to do. We're already doing it. And look, here's a happy customer. Here's somebody who's advocating. You know, here's some social proof. Here's some user-generated content that just talks about the great stuff that we're doing. And look, they're on board. They're a partner. Okay, they're a customer, but they're kind of like a partner of ours too. And think how that will build credibility going forward. Very, very hard for the competition to beat that, because that is real best-in-class activity. And of course, we see that through good case study example is Nike's consistent focus on inspirational messaging. And that really has solidified its position as more than a sports brand. And it's a symbol of, you know, the Just Do It is a symbol of motivation and determination. It becomes part of the modern vocabulary. You know, we often say to our friends or our sports team colleagues or people at work, we sort of say, you know, just do it. You know, and it's kind of in a Nike style, the way that we would say that. And so it becomes part of everyday living, if you like. And what a stronger brand position could you ever want than that? So think about how you might translate that into your world and into your sector. Because again, this is all very good practice that allows us to kind of craft, you know, maybe slightly more innovative approach, particularly if you're quite a static, commoditized industry that you're operating in. You know, this allows you to approach innovatively your storytelling and your brand messaging, which is the thing that's kind of underneath and underpinning your branding. And this is what your customers are waiting to hear from you. Their expectation is, well, you're going to come to me with your very best stuff. So impress me, engage with me intellectually, engage with my thinking, but also engage with me emotionally. You know, it's interesting that Seth Godin consistently says marketing is no longer about the stuff you make, but about the stories you tell. So this is about crafting stories that will resonate with your audience's experiences, with their challenges or their aspirations. If you can be with them on their life journey, why would they want to go anywhere else? You know, using a mix of content formats, using a number of different styles that are within your brand proposition, it can help to tell your brand story. And engaging the audience by making them feel part of your brand story, because it includes people just like them, can be even more powerful. You know, Airbnb's example campaign Live There was a really, really great example of, you know, effective storytelling, positioning the brand as a way for travelers to experience destinations like a local. And we can see things like TripAdvisor as well, kind of coming in off the back of that and saying, okay, here's people just like you who have had that sort of experience, engage with us. Here's our recommendations. Again, advocacy, user-generated content. These are the kinds of things that your customers are expecting from you. So if you think that your branding and your marketing is done in isolation and it's just about you publishing it, then there's work to be done, because all of these things require extra effort and energy, but then they gather a life of their own and they are so, so powerful because it's coming as well from a third party. And with the emergence, obviously, of different digital platforms and this world of, interconnectivity, your customers are increasingly expecting, your internet customer service to be, almost sort of multi-channel, so it's available to them wherever they happen to be, in whatever channel they want to experience it. They need to be able to engage with you to create what you might describe as a seamless customer experience. So by plotting out the reality and then matching that reality with both what you believe you could deliver, but also what the customer's demanding of you. And again, you can't do this without understanding by listening to the customer and identifying which platforms they actually frequent the most. Because then, of course, by doing all of that and listening intently, almost forensically, to how they use these channels and when and where they'd like to engage with you, if through customer support or customer service, however you define it, you can then create platform-specific content to engage with them and engage with different audiences and different personas on terms that are on their terms, not your terms. So now when you see businesses that say, oh yes, you can contact us between the hours of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, you realize just how quickly they're missing the point. Customers may need you anytime, 24/7, 365. And we can find out whether that's relevant to then resource that kind of a service offering by using the analytics tools to track engagement and then adopt our strategies and adapt our strategies accordingly. So the multi-channel marketing framework will help you along with this one. Here's another marketing theory for you, which highlights the importance of engaging customers across various digital platforms to create this seamless experience. And Glossier's use of social media in this respect has created a community around its brand, which has been pivotal in its rapid, rapid growth. So that's a really, again, another really nice, neat example where, this stuff is not just us talking theoretically. It's actually happening. And there are brands out there who are really embracing this stuff and making it happen. So from your perspective, think about the level of customer experience. Does it match what your customers demand of you? And if they have to wait until tomorrow to get a response from you, think chatbots, think AI. You can do this stuff now. You don't necessarily have to have somebody sat there overnight waiting on the phone for that lost phone call that never arrives. Automation and adaptation here is key. So start doing the research. When is it needed and where is it needed? The technology is there to support you. And as we go through this, what we're realizing is that we need to keep a really kind of finger on the pulse here, regularly measuring and adapting to how this is all changing. Because if your customer research focuses on, finding out when do customers most contact us and when do they need us, do they actually need us 24/7, 365? If the answer is, well, not quite yet, you need to be regularly monitoring how and when they do then respond to you, because you only need one customer to give a negative review in this regard and everything might come tumbling down. So regularly monitoring the brand sentiment through social listening tools, for example, being proactive in addressing any negative kind of feedback that you get through your customer service channels, giving the feedback but actually responding positively to it, and continuously innovating and updating the offer based on that feedback is the way to go forward. So this is a really neat balance between strategic, that longer term thing when we think about our brand and the products and services, but also tactically responding in theory, in near real time to those ever-changing, ever-shifting customer demands. That's going to be really key for us all here. So we can leverage customer feedback for product development, is really what I'm saying. Ken Blanchard said that feedback is the breakfast of champions. I mean, if you really engage with this and really listen and don't mind hearing the honest truth, I mean, this is the point. Some of the feedback you're going to get if you do listen to these kinds of feedbacks, and if you do listen in social media, and if you do embrace the negative sentiments that you will undoubtedly occasionally get, even if you're the best brand on the planet, then it offers up the opportunity to create a structured system for collecting, analyzing, and rolling out, implementing that feedback. You know, you can prioritize feedback that aligns with your brand's long-term vision. So you don't have to do everything. Just because somebody complains doesn't mean that you change everything, but you might want to. There might be an opportunity here for going a little bit deeper with each piece of feedback and, you know, celebrating and communicating when changes are made based on customer input. Because if that customer was right, but they were the sole voice that helped you to change, then that should be celebrated because you were truly actively listening. But it also doesn't mean that you don't then lose sight of the masses. You know, having a closed loop feedback model, which emphasizes the importance of not just collecting, but acting on customer feedback, again, is a lovely little marketing theory. It's a model that just continually refreshes itself and just reminds you that this is an ongoing, iterative, continuous improvement process. Great example is Starbucks' My Starbucks Idea platform that allows customers to submit ideas, much of which, you know, the style that we're talking about here, and many of which have been implemented. And this then can be used in marketing to demonstrate the brand's commitment to listening to its customers. You know, not every idea is going to come to fruition, but a lot of them will. And what better if we're claiming to be marketing or market-centric, focused on listening to customers and then reacting and responding appropriately? What better way of demonstrating it with new products and services that were generated collaboratively with customer feedback? How exciting would that be if we were doing that ongoing? And one of the things that will come through loud and clear, undoubtedly, probably at an increasing rate, and a lot of the research says this, is that a lot of the feedback you will be given will be, where do you stand on your purpose and on your values and your sustainability credentials and your carbon footprint and this whole sustainability debate? You know, purpose isn't the sole pursuit of profits, but the animating force for achieving them, says Larry Fink. And I would certainly agree with that and Simon Sinek's golden circle theory, which you can start this process if it's not already up and running within your organization, focusing on starting with the why. Why are we in business? Why do we come together on a Monday morning, first thing, as a group of people to do business? Why are we here? And if the answer is to make profit, then we're missing the trick. We're missing the point of what the brand expectations of the world are coming in our direction. We need to be clearly defining and communicating our brand's purpose beyond just making a profit. Yes, if you're commercial, you need to make profit, but the right kind of profit. Go deeper and align every aspect of your business from product development to marketing with the purpose that you identify. What is our greater reason for being? And engage with your communities and global issues relevant to your brand's mission so you can consistently play back. And this is how to avoid greenwashing. Play back the evidence of what you're doing against what the world and the marketplace and your customers are looking to hear from you. And if you can make that equation balance, and Patagonia is the always referenced example of this, you know, if you can make this kind of thing resonate, you can differentiate beyond anything as a marketer you'll have experienced before. Patagonia's commitment, for example, you know, to environmental sustainability and community issues and ethics and the environment more generally, not only defines the whole brand purpose, but also deeply resonates with its customer base. If you are a Patagonia loyal customer, you will never, ever be anything different. This is the beauty of really sensing and responding to these increasing brand expectations, and what a lovely example where actually it's doing great for the planet as well at the same time. So what are we kind of identifying here? Well, for me, we're identifying a whole range of what we might term micro moments. micro moments. You know, Google have said, you know, to win the consumer, you have to win the moment. And I love that. There is a theory, actually, a marketing theory called the micro moments theory, which suggests that brands must be present in the moments when consumers or customers, as you want to define them, are ready to act. In other words, identifying key micro moments for your audience through data analysis all the way through the customer's journey, from those initial touch points right back upstream when they first become aware of you, through their building of faith and trust that you're a good brand to work with, all the way through the point of conversion where they commit to you, they become a customer, and then deeper into their journey through the loyalty loop where you're retaining them through great services, through great backup, great customer support, and maybe some kind of loyalty scheme. At each point in this journey, there are micro moments that are really critical points. I call it critical path. And if you can plot that critical path, those micro moments are moments when you can really see the impact of carefully targeting your brand positioning, your messages, your key propositions to them in those moments. These will then impact on your conversion rates. And of course, as you see this thing adjusting, as you move deeper down into the journey, you can then adjust your plans and your tactics and your strategies accordingly. Sephora, for example, nice brand here that leverages in-app features to capture customers at the moment of intent. If you download the Sephora app and have a little look at that, and they offer virtual try-ons and immediate booking options. They know the points where there is a critical point from the customer's perspective, where both head and heart are engaging. And these are the choice moments as to whether or not to engage with Sephora or go to a competitor. So we need to be thinking and learning from this best practice. What are our micro moments when the customer is most receptive to the messaging that we're putting out there, but also the key points in the customer journey where we could either make a real win and build that relationship with them or lose them forever? Those are the micro moments, those key points, as Google says, to win the consumer, you have to win the moment. So that's another really key thing. And what we're talking about overall here is customer experience. And of course, we are now able to enhance customer experience with so many different technologies. You know, the most profound technologies are those that disappear. They weave themselves into the fabric of everyday life until they're indistinguishable from it. Mark Weiser's comment and quote, which really reminds us that what we need to do as marketers and as communicators is blend in technology, blend in some of these emerging opportunities to enhance the customer experience. AI is a perfect example here. You know, investing in AI technology to simplify, to make more efficient and enhance the customer journey, and regularly updating the technology stack to keep up with new developments, and training the team to effectively use these new technologies in enhancing customer service, not shying away from it and thinking, oh, it's coming for my job, but actually embracing it and thinking there are certain things in here that it can do better than we can do. So therefore, let's just invisibly blend this in and use these new innovative technologies to just make things a little bit sharper, a little bit smarter, a little bit more responsive, a little bit quicker, because that's what the customer is looking for and demanding from us increasingly. So we can't do this alone. Embrace the technology. Great example, Domino's Pizza's innovative use of tech, from tracking pizza delivery to ordering via social media. And this has significantly enhanced the customer experience and their customer service ratings. So next time you order a Domino's, just watch the app, watch the website, and that tracking, which is in real time as your pizza, you know, starts off from a series of ingredients to arriving on your doorstep, trackable in real time, the number of different technologies that are going into play there, blended together. You don't need as a customer to worry about those. You just know your pizza's arriving when it's arriving, and it is the right one that you ordered. And that's that seamless kind of layer of experience over the top. So from your perspective, you're not Domino's, but from your perspective, what are you doing in this regard? And we just mentioned their social as something that is part of this. And of course, you know, there is an increasing brand expectation for authentic engagement through social media. You know, authenticity, honesty, and personal voice underlie much of what's successful on the web, Rick Levine. The concept of social proof, I've already mentioned this before, but it is really, really important because it posits that people will conform to the actions of others under the assumption that those actions are reflective of the correct behavior. This is the concept of social proof, another marketing theory for us. And it means that the more authentic and honest and true we are, that in itself will just by default build trust. So this isn't kind of some out there wild, wacky kind of psychological theory. It is very, very simple, is that if you can be stimulating and motivating and engaging through user-generated content that showcases real stories and experiences, if you can engage in conversations to build a community around your brand, how often do we hear this but don't act on it? This is the key thing for authentic engagement, is the building of an authentic, safe, highly valuable community around your brand, where you are the custodian, you are the kind of the owner providing that value, or at least perceived as providing that value. It's incredibly powerful. It's a great way of actually building brand over time. And again, this is what your customers expect from you. You can choose not to prioritize this. That is always going to be your choice and your prerogative. But these are some of the things that are really key. And a lovely example is from Lush Cosmetics, amazing organization. If you don't know too much about Lush, go and do a little bit of research into some of the things that they doing in the whole sustainability piece. It's quite incredible how they're doing this, and they are gaining market share hand over fist as a result of it. And they also use social media platforms to engage with customers authentically, so it, because they're showcasing these ethical sourcing and production practices using user-generated content, which is freely captured and freely given by customers, because the way the brand position itself as part of a community of which they are part, of course, they're fostering it and fueling it, but the customers aligned with Lush feel part of a collaborative community. So it's really, really powerful. In the chat, just to answer some of your question about will these slides be added to the Learning Zone, I will make sure that I give you the link at the end of this so you can follow up on this. So I'll get that to you. So thanks for the question there. Yes, I'll make sure that that you get these at the end of the session. Next thing is kind of building on that whole thing. And again, Lush will be doing this without any doubt at all, because I know they're very, very data centric as an organization. And it is the role of data analytics in building your marketing strategy to be able to respond to these brand expectations. W. Edwards Deming said, you know, without data, you're just another person with an opinion. I mean, that's an interesting little quote, isn't it? How can you back up and argue for more budget? How can you back up and argue in front of a customer or maybe a business partner, one of your stakeholders, that you chose that decision to do that particular action because you just kind of felt it was the right thing to do? How credible does that sound? How confident can you be? Well, probably not very. So the investment in robust data analytics tools and platforms, everything you do as a marketer, a business developer, content creator, business owner, whatever level you are in the organization, needs to be backed up by robust data. Don't do anything unless you can measure it, because otherwise you could be doing the wrong thing and then replicating. And that might not be meeting these increasing brand expectations or delivering value to your organization. And so developing a real culture, if you like, not only in yourself as a good habit, but with those around you, of data-driven decision-making within your team, is absolutely key. Because only in that way, by collecting evidence and data, when you start to put some of this stuff into practice, will you be able to continuously learn and adapt based on those insights. You know, a great example, and there are loads and loads of case studies which involve Netflix in terms of data. I mean, they use what we would term big data analytics to understand viewer preferences and to inform content creation and marketing strategies. So not only the next films they're going to be investing in, and let's face it, they do create a lot of content, but also what they then produce in the dashboard that you get recommended to based on your previous viewing. And it isn't just the ones that you've clicked on, the ones that you like. They will be watching the length of time and the frequency that you watch certain programs. So those decisions that you're taking then fuel their decisions for what else then to inform you with and what to play back against. So there's a huge opportunity here for all of us to kind of follow that, really. And within that, of course, comes the challenge of digital privacy and then how we use the data that we collect in our marketing going forward. Now, the trick really with this, and there is a privacy paradox, which I will let you explore, which does really explore the dichotomy between the desire for personalized experiences and your customer's concern over their privacy. In other words, they will say, I want you to give me a personalized experience, but then they'll click on the, no, not going to allow any cookies, and no, not going to give you email address, and no, not signing up for that, but give me a personalized experience anyway. It's an interesting challenge, and this is a paradox that you're going to face. But if you're transparent about how you collect and use that customer's data, if you offer customers control over the privacy settings, and the tech is there for allowing you to do that at whatever touch point, be it through an email subscription or any customer relationship management system, which you can plug in then to your website to allow your customers the control over how intimate they want to be in the relationship with you. And if you do all of these things, you will then be starting to ensure compliance with all the relevant data protection regulations, the GDPRs of this world, if you like, other standards and regulations also apply based on your particular sector. But this isn't an optional. Customers are really, really all over you right now, looking at how you're holding my data, how secure is it, how private is it? You know, will it ever be leaked? Will it ever kind of get out? Could it be hacked? As well as, well, if I give you this, what assurances are you going to give me back that you're going to look after this? So this is all about building trust and building confidence in your customers' minds. Again, comes into this trust in the relationship. You know, there is a desire out there in the world to have you being open and honest and actually entering into a relationship. If you're willing to do all this stuff, if you're willing to prioritize it, if you're willing to put the resources behind it, you will be rewarded because your competitors probably won't be. And this is going to start then to ripple out into the sectors that you serve. You know, we've seen over recent years the growth in micro-influencer marketing and how that helps to build brand trust and authenticity. You know, again, Seth Godin saying people don't buy goods and services, they buy relations, stories, and magic. This can come through from influencer marketing. I'm talking micro-influencer marketing here, influencers in and around the sectors that you want to be marketing to, whose brand and audience align with yours. And then focusing on creating authentic partnerships, not these one-off promotions that are just there for, you know, a quick win, quick campaign, and then we'll move on. But actually authentic partnerships. So with people and organizations who really want to see you survive and see you thrive at the same time as you then rewarding them with value because of the association with your brand. So measure the ROI of your campaigns and your strategies in your micro-influencer activities and go beyond just likes and shares. This is not a short-term thing. And one of the theories that you can look at here, if you need some backup on this one to sell it into your organization, is the theory of social influence. And this really kind of guides and helps you to identify and then share with others how individuals change their behavior to meet the norms of a social group. And this is often guided by those they listen to, the influencers or the micro influencers in those communities. And again, can you see what's happening? There's this desire from your customers to just get that reassurance. Can they be part of your community? Can they engage with these micro influencers? Are you part of that conversation? Because if you're not, a competitor will jump in and will be there instead of you. So this is probably one that goes in line with the community side of things. And to me, if you'd said to me, well, Neil, which one right here, right now would be, should be a key focus because everyone's looking at AI. Is it AI? I'd say, well, maybe depending on your role and your strategy, but probably it's the micro influencer and probably it's the community, because that to me is the thing that really seems to be shouting towards me, irrespective of market and industry and sector. And if you do go down this route of building community, one of the things that you will need to fuel that community with is content. So content marketing strategies for sustained engagement. Your customers want and they're expecting you to be in this for the long haul, okay? You need to be creating strategic content, not just content for the next week, the next month, or the next quarter. This is about developing a content calendar to maintain a consistent posting schedule. Your customers want you to be consistent, even if you find yourself saying the same thing. We know from decades and decades of experience in advertising, going back into sort of TV ad campaigns and radio campaigns, that customers, before they'd respond, needed to probably see the same ad seven times. The number differs depending on which piece of research you look at, but roughly it's around 5 to 7 times before people will actually act on something. So less is not more when it comes to content. You have the opportunity here to use a variety of content formats and channels, maybe, you know, catering to different preferences and different styles, if you like, of different persona. But the aim is always to provide value with your content, solve problems, tell stories, provide magic, answer questions, really get into building the relationship. And it is so, so important to think about this as driving a call to action. In other words, every single piece of content you publish, be super clear about what do I want my customer or the audience to do as a result of seeing this. You have to be super clear about it because that is what your customer wants. That's what they're expecting. That's what they want from your brand is clarity. Yes, they want to be entertained, educated, informed, guided even, but they want clarity. Where would you want me to go next? So that particular social media post, that reel, that email that comes through, okay, I'm in, right, where do I go next? And so if you don't give them that call to action, you fail at that first hurdle. Give them the call to action and you can leverage that kind of opportunity, if you like, for building that professional intimacy with them. HubSpot have got a comprehensive inbound marketing strategy. So they do and practice what they preach. If you go to the HubSpot website, there's a whole range of different guides and tutorials and white papers on this topic. And they themselves will leverage a mix of education, blogs, ebooks, webinars. And this has positioned them as a thought leader in the marketing industry, as well as obviously selling, you know, a market-leading product and service. So what are you going to do for your audience? What are you building in terms of the fuel, if you like, that powers not only your social media, but the community that you're building? Because this is an expectation on your brand. And as part of that, video is clearly the thing of the moment. We've had obviously the written word imagery over the last couple of decades. But of course, as we all know, it's video. Is it short form? Is it long form? It's probably both. Different sources for different courses and different horses. So think about your target audience. Include storytelling elements in both short and long form video to emotionally connect with the viewer. You know, optimize your videos for SEO to increase that reach and visibility. But all of the time, no matter how and where you are telling your stories through video, make sure that you're really monitoring those metrics so you can refine your future video marketing strategies. That's really key. A lot of us, when we start to do video content, we get very excited because we've got a process and you know, people start watching it and clicking on like and engaging with it. And we actually forget that we should be improving because not every piece of video content is going to be the same value or the same, you know, success as other things. So we've got to continuously evolve. So make sure, because now the metrics are coming through, now the insights are there, now the analytics are there for us to evaluate, that we don't rest on our laurels. We're all good at video marketing now. And we know coming forward with Sora, the new sort of text to video feature that ChatGPT is about to launch, it's currently in beta, that we will be able to do cinematic quality Hollywood style videos literally from a text prompt in the very, very short term. So this is a big one. This is a big one. The expectation on your brand to do really, really best in class video is not going to go away. It's going to increase. So make sure you're ready with video strategy and that you've learned by listening to the analytics that are already there behind the scenes. Don't get too carried away by the content. Make sure you're doing the measurement too. As a balance, I would always say it's kind of 90-10, if not 80-20. So 80% is in the content creation and production, but allow yourself the 20% to listen to what happens with that content and then measure and adapt as you go forward. Very, very important. Now, I touched there on the emerging text to video capability that ChatGPT is going to be launching very, very soon. And of course, we do need to be thinking about AI and leveraging that for this personalization of our marketing activities. Artificial intelligence is apparently now the new electricity. It is going to be all pervading on every platform. It's going to be embedded absolutely everywhere. It's going to help you to automate. But as all of those things happen, we as marketers need to make sure that we are understanding and still protecting, because of course that is only technology. We are still responsible in protecting of the customer data, the customer journey, and the personalizing of the marketing messages that we're putting out. We still need to own and be the custodian of those things. So yes, implement chatbots for instant customer service and engagement. Yes, continuously add, you know, the latest ChatGPT version so you can get better data, better accuracy, you know, higher quality content. That's all great. But remember, underneath all of this, no matter how you use it, the key thing to remember is that as a marketer, there's still a customer relationship that we need to be protecting. So this is technology to serve that. It's not the other way around. And it's very easy when there's so much noise and hype around this to forget that that's the priority. So remember that and keep that in mind. Explore these new platforms. I mean, you know, the metaverse is another one, VR worlds. You know, the metaverse is the next frontier in connecting people, according to a certain Mr. Zuckerberg, who has invested billions of dollars into Meta and the new kind of version, his version of the metaverses. Nike has been using Roblox. There are many metaverses. We should always talk about metaverses in plural. There is no one metaverse, despite what Mr. Zuckerberg says. There are many of them. My preferred one, because of its accessibility, is spatial.io, spatial.io. But you need to understand, irrespective of your choice, the unique culture and norms of each one of these new platforms. You know, yes, each one can create immersive and interactive experiences for your brand, showcasing products, services, having internal meetings, maybe engaging with stakeholders, maybe using it for case studies, you know, for conferences and for events. Collaboration, though, is going to be key. Think about these particular platforms. Understand where your influencers might already be in there doing this stuff. That is going to be key for the choices that you make. So go and explore this, what we're calling the new experience economy, because it will be part of your branding going forward. Your brand exists as it does because of the historic foundation that you've set. But going forward, it will need to evolve. It'll need to evolve into virtual environments. I'm actually finding myself no longer calling it VR, as in virtual reality, but NR, new reality, because for a lot of brands, this is going to be the immediate future, this blending between actual reality, physical reality, and the new reality, which is a blend of immersive online, on-screen stuff, or using headsets, et cetera. So do the research and engage, because it's already here, it's already coming. And just to round up this before I kind of summarize the key next steps that you can choose or not to take in this journey of responding to increasing brand expectations, I would give a nod back to one of the really, really significant areas that I think is going to apply to everybody. Certainly, if you remember back to Mark Carney, the former Bank of England governor, who said that people who don't take sustainability seriously will not be in business in the future. I'm paraphrasing, but that was what he said. That we need to align our environmental and social values within the way that our brand is perceived by the outside world. There are many models. The one I would always advocate is the Mindful Collective's new marketing mix. Go to mindfulcollective.net to explore that one. There's the very well-known triple bottom line, which focuses on the three new P's of people, planet, and profit, and encourages your business and your brand to measure your ecological and social impact, as well as your financial performance. But it is really about understanding and being really transparent about the social and the sustainable and the environmental journey that you're on, and engage your customers in that journey. Because the deeper they can come into the journey with you, knowing that it is a journey, it's not a destination. You know, we often hear net zero, it's not a journey. Sorry, it's not a destination, it is a journey. It's every step that you take is taking you one step forward into a better world. And your customers 100% are interested in your view on this. And if you fail to talk about this, if you fail or decide not to be part of this community conversation, then you're already out of the conversation. So I would say, all above all else, the technology, the community, the influencers, your sustainability credentials, and how you approach marketing sustainability is going to be the number one priority over the next 12, 24, or 36 months. So to round up, I'd like you to really be thinking about these, as far as I'm concerned, top five focus areas. There may be little points and little nuances of things that I've already mentioned to you that are, you know, very personal to you, and you can translate those into actions right here, right now. And if you can, then that is absolutely great. But for me, these are the top five: increased demand for personalization, a greater focus, as I've just mentioned, on sustainability, the expectation for an omni-channel experience right the way through your customer journey, the enhanced next generation digital experiences. So there's a lot of AI coming in there, metaverse coming into there, this new reality, and immediate and 24/7 customer support. So anytime, any place, anywhere support. If your customer wants to connect with you, where are you? How are you going to respond to that? Because that is one of the key things that can be the make or break. Some of the other things, you might get a second chance, but that 24/7 immediate customer support can be the make or break of that relationship that you have with them. So as we close, I'd like you just to remember that the landscape of these changing customer expectations isn't just a challenge, if you like, to overcome. It really is a canvas for our innovation. It's a call to action for all of us as marketers to reshape the future with creativity and foresight, so that we can craft experiences that not only meet, but hopefully exceed the dreams of our customers tomorrow.